This Family Life News Podcast is made possible by the support of listeners like you.
It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. Your money to start today. Inflation remains stubbornly high in this country. It was higher in February than it was in January. And economist Brian Brenberg starts us off by making sense of the latest consumer price index.
What does that mean for your wallet? It means the Fed doesn't have good data to start lowering interest rates yet.
Brenberg says in an election year, however, all bets are off.
Economically speaking, this data does not justify an interest rate cut. Now, the question always is, how political could the Fed get? Do they want to cut rates in an election year? A lot of people are asking that question. But economically speaking, because of all the spending that we've had, that's keeping these inflation rates elevated.
Inflation last month was running at 3.2%. Now, ideally, the government would like to get that under 2%. Not there yet. Gas prices at a new four-month high. Experts say that's due to a switch in the type of fuel used. When winter turns to spring, the spring blend tends to be more expensive. The price at the pump averaging $3.40 a gallon nationwide, slightly lower than that in New York, slightly higher in Pennsylvania. The special counsel who raised issues about President Biden's mental acuity is testifying right now before the House Judiciary Committee. It's the first time Robert Hur has answered questions in public about his probe of the president's handling of classified documents. More from Scott McFarland on Capitol Hill.
In a summary of his findings, Hur wrote that there's nothing criminal, nothing to prosecute in this case, but he also made reference to the president's advanced age and alleged memory failures.
Correspondent Haley Jackson says today's testimony could add to the public narrative about how mentally fit the president is to serve a second term.
More than half of voters say that they believe that they do have concerns about the president's age and fitness for office.
The prime minister of Haiti is stepping down as law and order collapses in that Caribbean country.
We acknowledge the resignation of Prime Minister Ariel Henry.
Armed gangs have been running roughshod over Haiti for several weeks. They broke into prisons and took over the airport in Port-au-Prince. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
Escalating violence, unrest. This has created an untenable situation for the Haitian people.
Jackie Charles covers the Caribbean for the Miami Herald.
Trying to get some kind of a political deal among Haitians has been something that Ari has not been able to accomplish. And at the same time, gangs stepped into this power vacuum.
Ariel Henry took over Haiti in 2021 after the assassination of the previous prime minister. The U.S. will pay $100 million to deploy a multinational peacekeeping force to Haiti. A federal criminal investigation of Boeing has begun. The Justice Department focusing on a door that blew off an Alaskan Airlines flight in January. Three passengers were injured. Correspondent Tom Costello.
Production standards at Boeing are under intense scrutiny following a series of troubling incidents involving Boeing planes.
Adding to the mystery, a former Boeing executive turned whistleblower killed himself last week in Charleston, South Carolina. 62-year-old John Barnett claimed before his death that the company took retribution against him for calling out safety concerns at Boeing. It's primary day in four states, and when the voting is done, both President Biden and former President Trump are expected to clinch their party nominations. The lines were long this morning outside a polling station near Atlanta.
Personally, I just want a Republican in the White House.
I just hope the Democrats will come out and vote.
Voters in Georgia, Mississippi, Hawaii, and the state of Washington are headed to the polls polls as the race for the White House heads down the home stretch. Former President Trump says a TikTok ban would empower Facebook, which he calls the enemy of the people. Reporter Nicole Killian says those comments could impact a House vote tomorrow on the future of TikTok.
House Majority Leader Steve Scalise said they plan to move forward with a vote on this bill as soon as this coming Wednesday. So whether or not those Republicans who have come out in support of this measure change their perspective in any way in light of the former president remains to be seen.
Important to note here, the House is not voting to ban TikTok, just force a change of ownership due to its ties to communist China. Chris Bedford writes for The Federalist.
TikTok's in a dangerous place right now because at one point they're saying, hey, we're not controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. And the other end, they're saying the Chinese Communist Party won't let us divest from American interests.
President Biden says he'd sign the TikTok bill into law if it reaches his desk. Former Trump advisor Stephen Miller is blasting President Biden for walking back comments about the migrant accused in the murder of Georgia nursing student Lakin Riley.
When it came time to give an apology, to whom did he apologize? He apologized to the criminal alien accused of this savage beating and murder. He said, I will not call the man illegal. He apologized to him and not to the family of this incredible young woman.
The White House insists no apology was given. The president telling MSNBC he regrets referring to the migrant as an illegal, adding he should have used the word undocumented. Police say Lakin Riley was killed while jogging last month by a man who entered this country illegally a couple of years ago. A Gold Star dad whose Marine son was killed in our botched withdrawal from Afghanistan is doubling down on his condemnation of the commander-in-chief. Steve Nakui was arrested for disrupting the State of the Union address last week.
I don't even know what I did. I just jumped up and I said, do you remember Abbey Gate? It was like the Lord convicted me. The Holy Spirit got in me because I've been waiting for 3 years for this man to say my son's name into this chamber and he never did.
Abbey Gate is the site of the 2021 terrorist attack at the Kabul airport, which took the lives of 170 Afghans, along with 13 U.S. service members, Nakui's son Kareem among them. That dad now faces a $500 fine and 90 days in jail for disrupting the State of the Union speech. A passing to note from the music world, singer Eric Carmen has died. The former lead singer of the Raspberries turned out that mega hit in 1987, which was featured in the film Dirty Dancing. Eric Carmen was 74. Still to come on the Noon Report, day of action in Albany, efforts to decriminalize adultery, and McCarthyism at the New York Attorney General's office.
Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Williams. A fine day is underway. How about the rest of the week? We'll take a look. Forecast details are up in 10.
All right, we'll see you then. Thank you, Kevin. In the meantime, let's check the stories making news where you live. Christian activists have converged on the New York State Capitol today to raise awareness about such issues as assisted suicide and rally support for parental rights. Family Life's Greg Gillespie has more from Albany on this, the annual Legislative Day event.
There are several hundred activists all the way from Jamestown down to the Bronx. Their goal here is to encourage a Christian activism that can take place on a statewide level, and it's also got some take-home value. As far as the speakers today, quite a bit of pro-life speakers who will be continuing to talk through the early afternoon before the crowd. Many of them will head over to the state capitol offices to meet with legislators.
What does Christian activism look like in 2024, Greg?
Well, I think Jason McGuire said it very well. He says that one of the important things to remember, even as much of the New York power balance seems to lean liberal and less than biblical, regardless of where your theology is, that he says that those who are Christians are never in the minority. And so the goal is to be in the public square saying, "Thus says the Lord," and letting God work out the politics and the logistics and the particular social angle.
That is Family Life's Greg Gillespie reporting from Albany for this year's Legislative Day event. It is sponsored by New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. Pennsylvania State Police are investigating a fatal shooting at a Walmart supercenter in Punxsutawney. It happened after an altercation between two men. One of them shot the other. Police say there is no threat to the public. The suspect is in custody. That shooting happened in the parking lot of the store. The suspects accused in the death of a veteran cop in western New York are about to face a judge.
Two suspects charged in connection with the death of Genesee County Sheriff's Deputy Sergeant Thomas Sanfratello are scheduled to appear in Batavia Town Court at 1 o'clock this afternoon. The deputy died early Sunday morning while working on a special detail at the Batavia Downs Casino. Circumstances surrounding the death remain under investigation, and two suspects are being held at the Genesee County Jail. They were allegedly involved in a struggle with the deputy as they were being escorted out of the casino following an altercation. Michael Elmore is charged with manslaughter and assault on a police officer. Lindsey Jean Wilcox, who was with Elmore, is accused of assault and burglary. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
Okay, Dee, thank you for that. Sergeant Sanfratello was a 32-year veteran of the Genesee County Sheriff's Office. Those who knew him say the loss is deep.
For me, very personal loss because I've known him well for quite a few years now. I'm not sure if anything can really comfort people at a time like this, to be honest with you. I do know that Tom loved his job.
Thomas Mitchell with the New York State Sheriff's Association says Sanfratello's training and expertise made him well-respected within law enforcement circles. A serial car thief near Buffalo has pled guilty to 15 felony charges. 21-year-old Richard Lucas of Cheektowaga admits he stole cars from dealerships in Orchard Park, Amherst, Tonawanda, Grand Island, Clarence, and Rochester between March 1st and September 3rd of last year. All the cars stolen were high-end vehicles, included an Aston Martin, a BMW, Mercedes-Benz, and even a Bentley. Lucas facing up to 15 years in prison when sentenced next month. Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson says he supports that bill in Congress that will be voted on tomorrow that forces a change in ownership at TikTok.
If it would be just outright banning, then I probably wouldn't, because that's a First Amendment right, you know, whether we like speech and where people are communicating or not. But that's not what's going on. This piece of legislation is for the good of the nation. And it's just saying, you know, divest from the Chinese Communist Party.
TikTok is used by half of Americans on a daily basis. A three-alarm fire lit up the night sky in central Steuben County, New York last night. Several crews responding to the massive blaze in the village of Bath. Those flames were seen for miles away. Nobody was inside at the time. There were downed power lines in the area near the building when firefighters arrived on scene. That building was home to Clark Specialty, an equipment manufacturer. New York's Attorney General Tish James got booed last week at a promotion ceremony for firefighters. Here's what it sounded like inside that church in Brooklyn.
Oh, come on, we're in a house of God. First, simmer down. I want to thank Commissioner Kavanaugh and Chief Hodgins for that recognition.
Now the FDA's launched an investigation into the incident. It is collecting surveillance video from the event to identify the firefighters who jeered the attorney general and cheered the former president, Donald Trump.
When you start receiving emails that say, "We will hunt you down," there's video with your images on it, and you will be brought in for education, and that your fellow firefighters should tell the administration, you know, who was participating in this behavior. That sounds a little like McCarthyism to me.
New York City Councilwoman Joanne Areola.
This was their First Amendment right. And what was really the thing that was bothering them about the chant? If they were chanting Tish, 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 would it have been a problem? If they were chanting Biden, 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 would it have been a problem? But they were chanting Trump, Trump, Trump.
Areola's concerned some of those firefighters could lose their jobs for exercising their First Amendment rights. Three people are in the Bradford County, Pennsylvania lockup charged in connection to the grisly murder of 40-year-old Michael Pruitt. Pennsylvania State Police say Pruitt was shot to death last week at the home of his girlfriend in Springfield Township. That girlfriend is among those facing charges, and those charges include homicide, tampering with evidence, and abuse of a corpse. A new study shows speed cameras work at reducing crashes in highway work zones in Pennsylvania.
New data shows placement of speed monitoring cameras along Pennsylvania highways helped to reduce speeding and crashes in work zones over the course of a five-year pilot program by PennDOT and the Turnpike Commission. Officials say there was a 47% reduction in excessive speeding and a 50% decline in work zone crashes. Because of the success, the program is now going to be used on a permanent basis moving forward. Active work zones will be marked and equipped with speed safety cameras that detect and record drivers exceeding posted work zone speed limits, and drivers violating the speed limit could receive warning letters or fines. Brian Querry, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brian. A Long Island lawmaker wants to decriminalize adultery in New York. According to the state penal code, adultery is still a Class B misdemeanor. Since 1972, just 13 people have ever been charged with this. Five were convicted. Democratic Assemblyman Charles Levine says his bill would remove what he calls archaic legislation from the New York State Penal Code. Sports news next. It's the 2-Minute Drill on Family Life.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, many are saying the Philadelphia Eagles are back to being Super Bowl contenders and maybe even the favorites to win it all. After poaching former Penn State standout Saquon Barkley from the New York Giants, Barkley signed a 3-year contract with the Eagles. And that's not all Philadelphia did. They also signed Bryce Huff to a 3-year deal. The edge rusher had 10 sacks and 29 tackles last season with the Jets. Speaking of the Jets, they signed quarterback Tyrod Taylor and guard John Simpson, and New York also inked veteran kicker Greg Zuerlein to a 2-year deal. Well, let's talk about the action last night on the ice. The Blue Shirts wrapped up their homestand with a 3-1 win over the New Jersey Devils at Madison Square Garden. Mika Zibanejad, Erik Gustafsson, and Shimon Nemich all scored for the Blue Shirts. The Islanders didn't fare as well, as they were shut out on the West Coast by the LA Kings. The Kings got stellar goaltending by David Riddick, picking up his second shutout of the season, 3-0. The Blues and Jets also picked up wins. In the NBA, the Boston Celtics continue to roll along with the best record. They now have 50 wins on the season after beating Portland 121-99. Detroit was a 114-97 winner over Charlotte. The Suns got 37 points from Kevin Durant, and they came back to beat the Cavs 117-111. That is a look at sports.
Thank you, Randy Mann. Still to come on the Noon Report, Her on the Hill, Haiti topples head of state, and four more decide today. It's Super Tuesday, Part 2.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. H. Al Mencken famously defined Puritanism as, quote, the haunting fear that someone somewhere might be happy. However, judging by the mental and emotional condition of the children of secularism today, it's not Christianity, Puritan or otherwise, that's making people unhappy. Never before have so few Americans identified as Christians or attended church. Many are quick to blame Christianity and its moral demands for that decline. After all, the story goes, Christians are outdated, they're spoilsports, biblical morality deprives people of freedom and self-expression, and much of the church's teaching, especially about sexuality, is harmful and abusive. In contrast, secularism, with its so-called sexual liberation, well, that's sold with the promise of allowing people to be free and happy. Secular thinkers vowed to bring about human progress and flourishing. The 20th century, however, proved that these thinkers were not able to deliver the goods, at least on a civilizational level. All of the promises they made about civilizational progress, at least, had clearly failed. In response, in the middle of the 20th century, postmodern thinkers like Foucault and Derrida announced the death of secularism's utopian dreams, but kind of held out hope that sexual liberation would, and could at least, make people happy. Well, if the first couple decades of the 21st century are any indication, those promises are as hollow as the other ones. Last year, a Gallup poll found that just 41% of Gen Z feel as if they're thriving. That's compared with 60% of millennials at the same age. Also, members of Gen Z are, quote, far less likely to describe their mental health as excellent than previous generations. Their struggle's not solely or even primarily about circumstances like economics. Instead, what they're dealing with is a deep-seated emotional, psychological, and spiritual brokenness. In fact, a Center for Disease Control spokesperson that was quoted in the New York Times last year admitted that, and I quote again, young people are telling us they're in crisis. Especially girls are being hard hit. Nearly 3 in 5 teenage girls felt persistent sadness in 2021. 1 in 3 girls seriously considered attempting suicide, and more recent surveys show little evidence of any improvement now as we get further and further away from the pandemic. On top of this, maybe because of it, Gen Z has become the most undateable generation ever. One reporter at Deseret News described today's young adults as terrified of commitment and serious relationships. Put it all together, Gen Z's unhappy, unwell, chronically lonely, to say nothing of the social contagions like gender confusion that are sweeping through their ranks. So what became of all the happiness that was promised if only society were liberated from religion and morality? Ex-evangelical deconstruction stories aside, ours is not a culture that's been guided by Christian values for many years. Millennials were arguably the first generation to grow up in a truly post-Christian America, but Gen Z, only 36% of whom call themselves Christian, are indisputably the children of secularism, and apparently it hasn't been good for them. Of course, there are other factors other than just religious belief or the lack thereof that affect our well-being. The rise of smartphones and social media have contributed to the erosion of happiness and the mental health problems in the last decade. Atheist historian Tom Holland has famously challenged the narrative that Christianity was the historical enemy of things like human rights and equality and science and democracy. As he argues in his book, Dominion, Christianity actually gave birth to all these things. What we need now is a new Tom Holland to make the case that Christianity, far from the haunting suspicion that someone might be happy, has been the only thing preserving the institutions and the practices that make for a thriving populace today. And perhaps a generation that's been victimized by the bad ideas that eclipse their faith will turn back to faith and instead deconstruct their secularism. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Thank you, John. Outside next, Kevin Williams.
Here is your family life weather forecast for this afternoon. Ample sunshine and mild. High temperatures, 50s and low 60s. Partly cloudy tonight. Low temps, upper 30s to the middle 40s. Tomorrow, some sunshine. A little cloudier near Lake Ontario, but it's a nice day overall. Quite mild. High temperatures, mid-50s to mid-60s. Clouds, some sun. Continued mild Thursday. High temperatures, mid-50s to the middle 60s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. Glad to have you with us today. I'm Bob Price. Lots going on Tuesday, the 12th of March, Haiti's embattled Prime Minister Ariel Henry has agreed to resign amid weeks of gang violence that has that Caribbean country on the brink of collapse.
Henry's announcement followed an agreement struck at an emergency meeting in Jamaica between leaders of Caribbean nations and Secretary of State Antony Blinken to form a council to eventually find a new leader in Haiti.
Reporter Christian Benavidez says the U.S. will provide $100 million to set up an international peacekeeping force in Haiti. Special counsel Robert Hur is testifying today before Congress about his probe into President Biden's handling of classified materials. That probe found no criminal wrongdoing, but Hur did raise questions about the president's mental acuity.
House Republicans today are likely to accuse Hur of giving President Biden a pass and to press him for additional observations about what Hur called Joe Biden's diminished faculties. House Democrats are likely to zero in on Hur's conclusion that no criminal charges were warranted.
On Capitol Hill, that's correspondent Peter Alexander. There's been a horrific crash in Illinois. 3 children and 2 adults are dead after the driver of a school bus crossed the center lane of a highway and then crashed head-on into a tractor trailer. The local sheriff is Bill Redshaw.
Schuyler County is a small county, small community, Raceville, Illinois. It's a close-knit family, and when you have lost a life like this, it's devastating. It's quite a tragedy, and our prayers go out to the families.
The crash happened about an hour's drive west of the state capitol. Authorities still investigating investigating why that bus driver careened into the path of that semi. Philadelphia police have arrested two teenagers and charged them with shooting eight high schoolers at a city bus stop. Deputy Police Commissioner Frank Venor says others are wanted.
We're not done. We have other people that we need to contact. We know who they are. Anyone who may have aided and assisted them, we're coming for them too.
Venor says the gun used in the crime had a Glock switch, which turned a pistol into a fully automatic machine gun. The victims, seven boys and a girl, were between the ages of 15 and 17. It's primary day in four states: Hawaii, Mississippi, Washington, and Georgia. Reporter Jonathan O'Brien has more from Atlanta.
Both President Biden and former President Donald Trump are expected to clinch their respective parties' nominations tonight. Carol Baird from Fulton County says she's behind Biden all the way.
It's a job interview to me. It's not a personality popularity contest.
Former President Donald Trump says the stakes could not be higher, and he's urging supporters to look to November.
The sun rises on a brand new day for Georgia and for America.
59 Republican delegates and 108 Democratic delegates are up for grabs here in the Peach State. Jonathan O'Brien, Atlanta.
This is the Noon Report, a Tuesday edition on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Hometown Heroes on Family Life. I'm Mark Webster, and this week's guest is Hannah Farley, Community Outreach Manager for the University of Rochester's Finger Lakes Cancer Screening Program.
Rural area, for the most part, that you serve in the Finger Lakes. How challenging is that? What sort of obstacles do both patients and also you face?
When I'm out in the community, right, I've been doing this for about 5 years. A lot of the barriers aren't always, you know, we often think that, oh, it's transportation. No, it's proximity to a healthcare provider. Yes, in part it is. It is hard for a lot of people to go see a doctor, to go get a cancer screening when they live a 45-minute drive from the closest doctor's office. But another thing that I often see in our more rural areas, I call it grit. I grew up in a rural area, right? A lot of people think that they're pretty darn tough, and they are. But a lot of individuals, and my family included, don't like to go see the doctor because there's a perception that they don't need them, that they don't need a cancer screening, that if there is something wrong, then that's just going to kind of be the way that it is and to just have to live with it. And that's something I've seen a lot, especially in our rural areas when it comes to our cancer screenings.
How hard is it to sell screenings, if you will? Because no one wants to think about the possibility of getting cancer.
I'm so glad that you said, like, sell screenings. I was actually at a food pantry yesterday out in our South Seneca County talking about colon cancer screening. It is a very personal subject. People don't want to share that information. They don't want to be overheard talking about that information. What I found the best way to kind of encourage people to get their screenings, it's to, you know, really encourage, like, good stewardship of the body, not just for yourself. You know, I like to consider the body as kind of a gift, not just to yourself, but to your family. There's people that count on us to be around. A screening, obviously, yes, it's for yourself. It's for your long-term health. Those little decisions, like making sure that you schedule that screening and you keep that appointment and you show up to that appointment, those little decisions add up to long-term health, not just for you, but then long-term family health, where you get to stick around longer for your children, longer for your grandchildren, to see them grow up. I think that's very important. And I know so many people know that family is important. So that's kind of, like, you know, how I like to frame our health, is not just for ourselves, but for our family.
Tell me about some of the specific programs you've been involved with to try to increase the number of screenings.
We work with mobile mammography units from multiple health centers to help bring these mobile mammography units out to our more rural areas to help women get screened. And then we also will pay for those mammograms, and we'll pay for any diagnostic care that they need if they don't have health insurance, because that's another reason we found that people don't get screened, is they don't have health insurance and they can't afford it. And that's where actually the Cancer Services Program comes in, and we pay for those screenings for people that don't have health insurance and can't afford it. That's one of the programs. Another one is we really encourage people when it comes to colon cancer screenings to take the test that is kind of best for them. And the best test is really one that gets done. So we go out and we always have these at-home colon cancer screening kits with us. When I'm out in the community, if I find someone that they have to be 45 years of age or older for these colon cancer screening kits, there's like some age eligibility guidelines. But if I find someone that's 45 years or older, they don't have health insurance, they can't afford a screening, I will get them signed up for a free kit, hand it to them right then and there. Then they'll complete it at home. And if there's any abnormal signs within the stool, we're going to then also help them schedule a colonoscopy and pay for that as well. So those are just like a couple programs that we're involved in.
In your 5 years on the job now, I mean, what are some of your takeaways so far of what the biggest obstacles are and what the biggest challenges are that lie ahead?
The biggest obstacle I found is people waiting to get screened. People put things off until they see that there's a problem. And it's devastating to see this happen to people. People I know that I've met out in the community before, I've had conversations with them. I've tried to encourage them to get screened. And then you see that there's benefits in their honor and stuff. And it's really awful to see that. So people waiting to get screened continues to be the biggest obstacle that I see. And looking ahead, I really think that we are becoming slowly more health conscious, and that I think it's getting more normalized to talk about cancer. It used to be such a taboo subject. And now I think that we are more comfortable, you know, as a culture, sharing with our families, sharing with our friends our experiences with cancer. And, you know, maybe sharing about our most recent cancer screening, maybe sharing about our last mammogram or our colonoscopy. You know, how did that go? I see that looking ahead as a really positive change.
That's Hannah Farley, Community Outreach Manager for the University of Rochester's Finger Lakes Cancer Screening Program. Please join us again next time as we search for your home, your town, your hero. It's Hometown Heroes on Family Life.
Thank you kindly, Mark. And Hometown Heroes comes your way every Tuesday during the Noon Report. Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The chill and bluster of yesterday is long over now. That system has since departed. High pressure is in control, and that's the reason for the nice weather we're seeing today. A weak front will approach the region tomorrow. Its impact will be slight. In fact, only some clouds. It stays mild, in fact, for several days. For this afternoon, ample sunshine and mild. High temperatures, 50s and low 60s. Partly cloudy tonight, low temps, upper 30s to the middle 40s. Tomorrow, some sunshine. A little cloudier near Lake Ontario, but it's a nice day overall, quite mild. High temperatures, mid-50s to mid-60s. Clouds, some sun, continued mild Thursday. High temperatures, mid-50s to the middle 60s. All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Fine at noon, home at last. A four-person crew is back on Earth after a pre-dawn splashdown in the Gulf of Mexico.
Crew 7 is home safe after riding their SpaceX capsule Endeavour to waters just off the coast of Pensacola.
Dragon, splashdown.
SpaceX copy, see the same.
The crew includes astronauts from America, Europe, Japan, and Russia, and wrapped up a six-month mission to the International Space Station. This was the fifth time that this Crew Dragon capsule named Endeavour has been flown on a mission to the ISS. I'm Rory O'Neill.
All right, great stuff. Thank you, Rory. And that's the world we live in, folks. Tuesday, the 12th of March. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this Family Life News podcast. If you've been encouraged by what you've heard, please share it with others and click the subscribe button to automatically receive future episodes. Family Life is a listener-supported ministry. Podcasts like this are made possible by your financial partnership. Find out more at familylife.org.